Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namasami. This is the first talk of the 2010 Rains Retreat in Bodhinyana Monastery, the 26th Rains Retreat in this facility. And as usual, I'm not sure about yourselves, but for me, the Rains Retreat always starts a week or two after everybody else's, simply because some of the work which lands in your lap. But nevertheless, even though I was quite exhausted coming into this room, I got very inspired by the chant we do, the Dhammacakka Pavattana Sutta. It's obviously one of my favorite chants, and because you know enough Pali, you're following the words, knowing their meaning, and it's incredibly inspiring sutta. You know, it was the sutta which gave birth to the Dhamma. I mentioned to the lay people on Monday that the Asalha Puja, the full moon day of July, which marks the end of the hot season and the end of that period of prior to retreat period, that Asalha Puja apparently was the day, according to our tradition, when the Buddha taught the Dhammacakka Pavattana Sutta to the five ascetics. And because it was the first sermon and it was as full as just such memorable teachings, obviously, first of all, the middle way, which I tried to really push that one for such a long time, simply because some people are too ascetic and some people are too indulgent. And I don't think I need to tell you, for those of you who've been here long enough, just to know what happens when you indulge the five senses. Yeah, it's fun, you can have laughs, you can have jokes, but you go back to your heart and the mind is dull. It does borrow energy, among other things, which means it's a great cause for the dullness of the mind later on. And on a retreat such as this, you can't afford to be dull for too long. And so just if you are dull, just watch. Now, is it you're just indulging the five senses too much? Or just cut back a little bit. You find usually that every time you cut back on something, just give something up. Eat less or drink less or sleep less. You know, you cut back a little bit, it does actually give you a boost of energy. Certainly in my experience, every time I say no to something, just give up something. You know, within reason, obviously, you don't just give up all sleep and, you know, fast all the time. But you just give up a little bit and you do get a boost. I think that boost is that you're weakening the power of the five senses and their hold on you. Remember that, you know, you've been prisoners of those five senses for so many lifetimes. You've always been looking to those for your satisfaction and for your, it's almost like your playground. And now you're saying no to those things. There will be a reaction. But when you say no to them, you find out a huge amount of mental energy which goes out into the world of the five senses and wondering what's going on in the world, playing around, talking, listening, seeing, feeling, whatever it is. You find a lot of that energy is actually saved, it's preserved, which means you don't get so tired. Sure, as I kept on saying, there is an initial period when everyone just gets a little bit tired. It's just as the body and the mind is just getting used to the new sort of routine. It's almost like an orientation camp. I think, what's the word now? When you go to a new sort of climate and it takes a few while for you to sort of get used to the new conditions. It always has to have that transition time. Please give yourself that transition time, you know, a few days just to get used to the new schedule, to get over the sleepiness and the boredom so you can really get into the meditation. Don't expect too much too quickly. Just have a bit of a transition time. And once that transition time is over, just, now you've done something, you have let go of a lot, so don't go picking other things up again and just wasting the energy which you have. And of course, now the thing which I really sort of try and push against is this Atta Gilamata Anu Yoga, which is like practices, the Anu Yoga, the things we keep doing a lot, which actually literally ties out, you know, it's actually the atta, the sense of self. And so that, you know, when you keep tiring out, wearing out your body and wearying your mind, you know, that you do get, again, the tiredness, you get the negativity. So you've got to be be kind and peaceful. And that's why, the, you know, during the last year or 2 years, I've been given this as basic instructions, just make peace, be kind, and be gentle. Because I found that's a beautiful way of, like, understanding the middle way. And, you know, I don't just teach this, I practice it myself. And I do notice every time I force my mind, I just get tense. And I do get a bit of energy when you force, but then you have to pay for that later on with dullness. And so if you are dull, always investigate where it comes from. Now, it's good to actually to play around a little bit, investigate, try different things, and just until you know for yourself what I'm talking about. If it doesn't know what I'm talking about, you just believe it or you rebel against it, it doesn't really help at all. So find out for yourself that there is a way of getting this beautiful mental energy, and it's not through force, it's through just being still, letting things be, being kind, being gentle. And, you know, because I know how to do that, I've been doing it for so many years, it's brilliant. You know, just remember that retreat in Germany. I just had some great little meditations there, just because I really knew how to relax and let go and just be still and peaceful. And, you know, it's a nice place. I didn't have many things to do. I didn't have any crazy people coming up to ask you questions. And so because of that, or any hoons driving in the monastery, you having to chase them out like a policeman. But anyhow, that I notice how to keep that mind quiet. And basically that middle way, the first teaching of the Buddha, don't think you understand it. It is actually incredibly profound teaching. I always look at the other place where I saw that middle way explained, in the Arana Vibhanga Sutta. You know, where that, you know, the Buddha said you should know the pleasures to follow and the pleasures to abandon. It's always about the pleasures of the five senses. Just abandon those. Not so you become bored and miserable and have no fun in life, but instead of the sacrifice the pleasures of the five senses in favor of the pleasures of the mind. And this is what happens. You know, once you let go of that five sense world and you just restrain the senses, you know, you don't sort of worry about too much about your food or about sort of too much drinks or snakes or gummy bears or whatever else is, you know, there for you. You don't sort of worry too much about fun and games, but you stay by yourself in some solitude. You actually do find you get some joy up, some happiness. Of course, you know, keeping precepts is called the Anawajasukha, the blameless happiness, or like I chanted for the Anagarikas after the ordination, Silena Sukhating Yanti, that through precepts, through your even restraint, it leads to happiness. It leads to happy abiding. It's not just a happy rebirth, it just leads to a happy abiding. And so that's why we just keep these precepts. We restrain ourselves because it does lead to a sense of peace and happiness, which is beautiful to experience. And I know, just having kept precepts for such a long time, for 36 years now, that does give you a huge boost of energy, a natural boost of energy. And that boost of energy gives you a lot of happiness. And so that happiness is important. The happiness from precepts is to be followed, is to be encouraged, is to be developed, and is actually to be exploited. So don't just give those happinesses up. Keep those precepts, and it's wonderful. And these are the happinesses of the middle way, the inspiration. You know, when you sort of see, listen to a good Dharma talk, or you read a good Dharma talk, or you get on the in the library, and just you listen to something on a good CD, and it really, you know, encourages you. I've had some, remember in those early years, some great meditations after talks by Ajahn Chah. And sometimes you'd hit the spot, and it just was beautiful. Then you'd just sit down there, and just the mind would bliss out, simply because you were inspired. And sometimes you'd done that reading the suttas, because, you know, some of those suttas, especially the ones, you know, if you can read them in Pali, oh, they're just incredibly beautiful. We just said, you know, at the end of that Dhammacakka Sutta, the five ascetics, the five first disciples, they atamana, they delighted in those teachings. And that delight in the teachings is an important part of our practice, because that totally, not totally, but pretty much eradicates the five hindrances, the delight in the Dhamma. That's why it's there for. So just, and that was the middle way. The middle way was not a sort of boring, dull way, but get rid of all the suffering, get rid of the joy and the happiness of the five senses, and there's only one thing you're left with, which is the pleasure and the joy of the sixth sense, the pleasures of the mind. And of course that's what we get involved in this monastery. Sort of, you know, inspiration, joy, you know, compassion is a joy from the mind, loving kindness. You know, so if you're on retreat, you know, feed those kangaroos. Just that compassion gives you a bit of joy, a bit of happiness. Stroke the cat. Sort of not out of sensory pleasure, but actually just a lot of times if I stroke that cat or put it on my lap, it's just, it hurts after a while and you don't want to move because you don't want to sort of hurt the cat or disturb the cat. So it's a sacrifice, and that's why it gives you a sense of joy. It's a bit of selflessness, a bit of not really concerned about the five senses, but concerned about an inspiration of giving and being kind and just letting go of your own ideas and own wants, especially with regard to your physical comfort. So that this is actually what we can get off on in this monastery, just enjoying the bliss of the mind, and that is the middle way. But of course also that Buddha started talking about Four Noble Truths, and this is incredibly powerful deep teaching. And elsewhere the Buddha said that if you understand the Four Noble Truths, fully understand them, then you're an Aryan. You are a person who is destined for enlightenment. You're a stream winner at the very least. I remember when I first read that, I thought, my goodness, everyone understands the Four Noble Truths. Does that mean everyone is a stream winner? And of course it's not. It's because people don't fully understand the Four Noble Truths. That's why, if you are listening carefully, the Buddha actually said that first noble truth is parinyatabhang. It is to be fully understood. Now the prefix pari means like fully, all around, completely. Nyatabhang is to be known. That's why I love learning Pali, because you can understand these words and they got the full meaning. You don't need to look in the dictionary, you get the understanding deep inside what those words mean, to be fully, completely known. Just like parinibbana means a complete nibbana, not just a partial nibbana where the five khandhas are left remaining, but the parinibbana, the complete, total, all-around cessation of finishing and gone with all the khandhas and everything else. So the parinyatabhang, to be totally known during this retreat, if you're not a stream winner yet, and it's great being a monk because you've got to be really careful. If you go along and say to someone else you're a stream winner, you're not, and it's out of pride, out of a lie, you've had it, you have to disrobe. It's a parajika offence. So it's a very, very sort of difficult for a monk to actually say they're a stream winner. They have to really know for sure. Wish that rule there was with lay people as well, and with novices, because then you wouldn't get so many of these jojos going around saying they were stream winners. Because, you know, for a monk, you really have to be careful, because it's, you know, disrobable offence if you get it wrong. Obviously, if you, you know, just get it wrong out of overestimation, it's no problem, but, you know, be careful. So because of that extra care, that you have to really know and say, do I really understand those Four Noble Truths, especially the first one of suffering? And this is actually the great little teaching of the Buddha, fully understand it. If you can't be confident to say you're a stream winner, then it must mean there's some bit of suffering you haven't fully understood yet. What is it? What part of dukkha haven't you seen? A lot of times it's, you know, dukkha is out there somewhere. It's the dukkha inside, in the one who knows, seeing that that is dukkha. In the will, seeing that is dukkha. That's what most people don't see. Actually, most people, even worse, they think, yeah, you know, my current wife is dukkha, but the next one I'm going to get, that's not dukkha. Or, you know, just, you know, this illness is dukkha, but once I get better, then there's no dukkha anymore. Well, they have all these ideas of, you know, when I go to where I want to go, when I sort of leave this place and go somewhere else, then there's no dukkha. Look, just wherever you go in this world or in this monastery, that dukkha always follows you. Certainly know this body is dukkha, so it doesn't matter what medicine you have, doesn't matter sort of what exercise you do, it doesn't matter what medicine you take or what food you drink, it'll always be dukkha. And don't think that some people say, once I live by myself and I'm in charge, I don't have to follow any rules. Once I make those rules, I'm an abbot, I'm a boss, then I have no dukkha. You have more dukkha. It's an old teaching that if you're an abbot, you have abbot dukkha. If you're a second monk, you have second monk dukkha. If you're a third monk dukkha. And if you're sort of the store man, you have the store monk dukkha. You know, and I thought Aikakata can tell you what that means. Just having, you know, 250 robes to try and put somewhere. If you're the workshop manager, you have workshop manager dukkha. You'd always find you tidy up that place and tomorrow some Jojo's gone in there and messed it all up again, not putting their things away. If you're the Jhana Grove caretaker, you have Jhana Grove caretaker dukkha. And if you manage to get away with taking any duty in this monastery, it's really smart, you have, you know, doing nothing, being a selfish monk dukkha. Whatever it is, there's always some dukkha somewhere. So, and I don't think that you can escape dukkha. You just swap one form for another form in life, that's all. Outside. But you do have a chance of escaping dukkha, at least knowing it, by sort of knowing the inner dukkha. And, you know, one of the sayings is, like, just wanting is suffering. Just contemplate. Whenever you want something, as it said there, you're separated from what you want. Piyehi vipayogo dukkho. What you desire, what you want, you are separated from. That is dukkha. And I love that little phrase because it meant that whenever I want something, whenever something's dear to me, even if jhanas are dear to me, even if just having a rest is dear to me, even if just having a bit of solitude, please, is dear to me, well, that's suffering. You know, it's quite valid to want those things. You know, people think it's okay to want those things, but as soon as that want comes up, because I'm separated from what I want, because where I am is not where I want to be, then that's called dukkha. And because, you know, you really get into some parts of this dukkha, it's great to see and understand, because once you fully understand it, there's no difficulty meditating. Look, what are you doing when you're meditating? You know, is it meditation in the form of piyehi vipayogo dukkho, where you want to be, you're separated from that place? If you are, that's dukkha, that's suffering. So you can never get peaceful, never get happy, never get blissed out when you're practicing the way of dukkha. So that's why I keep on saying, look, let go of this, you know, things which you want. So there's no piyehi vipayogo dukkho. You know, you just, where you are is where you want to be. And that's a great little phrase there. Look, I don't just say that, I actually practice that. Sometimes I sit down, I'm tired, exhausted, having to do so much work and so many problems and difficulties which people settle on you. And then you sit down there and just think, oh, I don't want to be here. And I know that's suffering. I remember that. So I let go of wanting. I just want to be tired. I just want to be exhausted. I want to be exploited. I want to be misunderstood. I want to be this, I want to be that, because that's life. You can't do much about it. So when I'm happy to be here, that's when my suffering ends. So you actually do see that dukkha is not the cause of, craving is not so much the cause of suffering, but craving actually is suffering. It's suffering right now, and it does cause suffering afterwards. So that's why meditation is ending craving, temporarily at least. And so you can end suffering. You can have a little bit of an escape from the suffering and difficulty of life, and that certainly is my escape. So life can be tough, life can be sort of quite mean and cruel and difficult and tiring. But, you know, to be able just to be here, not want to be anywhere else, and practice no piya. No, I suppose it's not apiya, he means not just having no desire, but what you don't want. So I suppose you call it vipayehi, I don't know, Ajahn Brahmali, having no desire, being separated from desire. So that, there's no suffering there. So when you try that in meditation, you experience that for yourself. That's why meditation gives you insights. You try these things. You let go of craving, let go of wanting. There's nothing you want. There's nothing where you don't want. You're just staying here with no want. Then suffering disappears. Because suffering disappears, the mind gets very peaceful. And it leads to upasamaya. Now, chakku karani, jnana karani, upasamaya. One of my favorite words. Because upasama means calm, means peace, means stillness. It's almost a synonym for samadhi, in the sense that the jhanas, the first jhana is described as upasama sukha, the bliss of upasama. So this is almost like the taste of upasama, the taste of stillness, the taste of just peace. So these things are supposed to lead to that peace, to lead to the bliss of that peace. So you can see that if you do really let go of craving, let go of wanting, then it leads to peace. And of course, why does it do that, and why is it also so difficult to do? It's because it's the will again which creates the problem. And we say, yeah, everything out there is dukkha, but me inside here, you know, I'm not dukkha. And this is one of the great myths of humanity, who think that as long as they can instruct their will and give this will more skills and more wisdom, that they can avoid suffering. And that's what a lot of people do when they come to Buddhism. They don't really want to let go of the will or abandon it. They just want to make it more clever, more skillful, more tricky, so that they can avoid suffering and get what they want. So for many people who come to Buddhism or start training the mind, all they're trying to do is to make their will a bit more intelligent, so it doesn't make so many mistakes. To make it stronger, sharper, wiser, even to try and make the will more compassionate, thinking that that way they're going to avoid suffering. They never realize that actually the will itself, in all its forms, is essentially dukkha. It's a great thing to realize the will is suffering. It means that you just see it in your meditation and think, well, you suck, will. You're suffering. You're dukkha. So I'm not going to try and make you better. You're the source of suffering, a lot of source of suffering anyway. 90%, 99% of suffering comes from the will. So if you can see that, the chaitanya, the will, is dukkha. It says it so many times in the sutta. Chaitanya is part of sankhara, sankhara is dukkha. So when you see that, you can actually, maybe, let it go. If you see it fully, it's easy to let it go. Because we only cherish and attach to things which we think are pleasurable, beautiful, lovely. If we looked at will, chaitanya, just like that old simile of like a carcass of a dead dog, of course it's very easy to let go of carcasses of dead dogs. You don't really need to put forth much effort to throw that away. Because of that, you see that if you really understand what suffering is, you understand it fully, it's very easy to let go. Why do you keep holding on to something you know is just hurting you? So understanding these Four Noble Truths enhances the meditation and makes it more simple. So if you can't let go of will, it does mean you haven't seen that will is dukkha. You haven't understood the Four Noble Truths. Even that little part will stop you from becoming stream winner. And again, that's one of the reasons that I know I get into trouble for this, but just my experience, I can't see how anyone becomes stream winner if they haven't had jhanas and haven't sort of abandoned the will. Let it go. And actually see it absolutely 100% clearly. This will is a pain in the butt. I've always compared it to being like a sadistic prison guard, always making you do something, always causing your restlessness. So you can never be still for a moment. It's always do something else, make it better, go deeper, find out some insight, do this, do that. Sometimes where does your restlessness come from? What's the cause of it? And actually, if you can, you can look at it in this thing called will, pushing you around, never giving you a moment's peace. Always trying to do something, make it better. So you can put your mindfulness on this thing called will. And after a while, you see that it does cause you a lot of suffering. And when you let it go, that's what letting go means. It means subduing the will. Even like kindness, compassion is subduing your will. Gentleness, subduing your will. You find that when you subdue the will, a lot of suffering disappears. That's why when you let go, you bliss out. You will, you try and make it happen, you just make more suffering. You see the Four Noble Truths, it's obvious. That's why those people who go and just put this so much effort into their meditation, working through pain, just sitting and struggling, and I'm going to sort of watch my breath, I'm not going to move. See, those people, they just get such a strong will, they do become control freaks, and they do become very angry people. If you do more letting go, not only do you get peaceful, you get jhanas, but you become such a more peaceful human being. So, see that the will is dukkha. And of course the other part which stops people being a stream winner is that they don't see this consciousness as dukkha. There's still some part of their mind, the knower, even an original mind. They still say that that is not dukkha. Original mind, old mind, all minds, all consciousness. We'll do that chart next week, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Vijnana, the knowings, the six type of knowings. Through sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch, or through mind. Mind consciousness, mano-vijnana, all types of vijnana. Far and near, refined, subtle, gross. They're all types of vijnana, all types of knowing. Not me, not mine, not a self. It's impermanent. What's impermanent is suffering. This is saying very, very clearly that all knowing, all mind, all consciousness is dukkha. And until you actually see that and accept that, you'll always be attaching to some form of knowing. You'll never be able to totally let go. You'll never, ever be able to nibbana. You'll always be holding on to this tiny bit of consciousness. Why do people do that? It's because, again, they don't really understand not just dukkha, but anatta, non-self. I always say that most people, yeah, they can accept that many, many things don't belong to them, don't make up a self or a soul. You can accept this body. We know it's going to die. I've seen so many other people dying. I've seen people die in front of me. I've been with people when they've croaked their last. It's great being a monk. You actually get these privileges, which, you know, maybe you can only get when you sort of have got a relation dying, a close relation. As a monk, sometimes you see it often. And so that when you sort of are with people, you need to understand this body is nothing to do with me. But it's the mental stuff which people get attached to. They can't see. Especially will and consciousness. And here, especially consciousness. We always think that we are the knowing, that I am the one who's listening, I am the one who is thinking, I am the one who just could perceive all of this. And because of that, there's no way you'll be able to let that knowing go. There's no way you'll be able to stop when you die. A person who realizes that even the mind, the consciousnesses don't belong to me, they're just suffering, nothing to do with me. Only when they know it's not mine can I let it go. And when you let it go, of course, at the death there's nothing left. You've let go of everything. Five khandhas gone. And of course that means you don't get reborn again. So when the Buddha said he saw these Four Noble Truths totally, especially the first truth of dukkha, he could say with certainty, with agupa, unshakable, ayamantima jati, this is my final birth, it's my last life, no more of anything. Agupa me vimuti, ayamantima jati, to give the full phrase. That's brilliant. And I just, I'm exhausted this evening, but just when I sort of heard that, just I basically woke up. There's this incredibly powerful saying, this human being, the first one of, you know, this particular cycle, said that, and that was incredibly powerful and deep and inspiring and wonderful. And you can understand why he could say that. Now, sometimes people say they're enlightened, but this fellow, unshakable is my enlightenment. He knew why. Because he saw that sort of every part of the khandhas, the suffering, nothing to do with him. Only then can you let it go, in the same way. But when you realize that, you know, this consciousness is nothing to do with you and is suffering, it's dukkha, it's a dead carcass of a dog. Only then can you actually let it go. But if you cherish it, if you think it's important, if it's valuable, you'll never be able to let it go. Every time I go on an aircraft, which I do very often, you always watch the safety movie. There's nothing much to watch. At least you can watch that one. You watch the safety movie and they tell you, if you evacuate the plane in case of an emergency, do not take your personal belongings with you. But everybody does. And this is like an emergency now. This rains retreat, this is your chance. Evacuate the plane. Evacuate samsara and please do not take any personal belongings with you. No body, no will, no consciousness. Evacuate. Then you can actually survive, you can actually nibbana. For those of you who won't take things, and you ask, why can't people leave things? Even though it's dangerous, it can cost them their life. Why do they do that? It's always because it's important. You know, it's my money, it's my passport, it's my photographs, it's important stuff for me. If it's really important, that's what kills you. Because you cherish it. So, if you cherish, you know, your consciousness, you're never going to be able to let it go. Either when you die, or in meditation. Because we cherish the five sense consciousnesses. I mean, we do it. We do cherish it. We do cherish sights. And if somebody said tomorrow you're going to be blind, how would you feel? Imagine that. And if you thought, it doesn't matter, it's only a sense. One less to worry about. And if you really meant that, oh, well done, I'll pat you on the back. You're a good monk. You're letting go of stuff. Because eventually you're going to be blind. And death, and unable to sense anything with your body when you finally pass away and die. But if you cherish these things, you get worried and upset. So please, right now, just contemplate those five senses, and please do not cherish that type of consciousness. And please don't even cherish your mind consciousness as well. And again, it's great sort of getting into some jhanas and seeing consciousness for what it truly is. What did the Buddha call it? He called it a mirage. A mirage. Just like you see a rainbow on a wet day, or you see the reflection of, say, you know, a tree on a hot day on the road. It's just reflection, it's just a mirage. What a mirage means is something really there. It's true, you're actually seeing real light. You're not imagining these things. You see a rainbow, I see a rainbow, everyone can see a rainbow, you can take a photograph of the rainbow, it's real. But people can very easily give it a meaning it doesn't have. It's the same with consciousness. The meaning we give it is, it's mine, it's part of me, it's my essence. That's the mirage quality of it, it deludes us. And because we take it to be mine, we possess it and cherish it, we attach to it, and we just will not let it go. Why can't you get into jhanas? Why? It's because you cherish these five senses. It's not just cherishing the five senses, but all the business surrounding these five senses, all the stuff you think about and worry about. You know, physical pain and comfort, health, you know, the sights which you've seen, the tastes which you've experienced, and all the fantasies and dreams about those five sense world. It just occupies the mind. It's not just karma sukha, the happiness of the five senses, it's also karma vitaka, the thoughts and the proliferations of those five senses. So until one can actually see them all as dukkha, nothing to do with me, one will not be able to let them go. That's why the contemplating on something like the Dhammacakka, Pavattana Sutta, makes it very, very clear that all these things are dukkha. It means you have more opportunity of letting them go and getting into the jhanas. You're not attached to these things. You're not attached to the five senses, you're not attached to will, you're not even attached to consciousness. I mean, you really are not attached to them. How? Because you see them as suffering. And why am I attached to suffering? So I'm not a masochist, I don't want to suffer, I want to be peaceful, I want to be free, I want to be released from this pain of suffering. I want to sort of, you know, have a range retreat where, you know, I get the job done and have done with it and just not have to suffer anymore. So this is what we do. We know what suffering is. And when we see suffering, we let it go. We let go of the cause of suffering. We let go of the plane in which suffering exists. So that when we move away from that plane, that area, just all suffering just gone. So we move away from will, we move away from consciousness. All consciousness, six consciousnesses, but first of all the five. Then we understand what suffering is. You get sort of an understanding of that, and afterwards you say, wow, everything's disappeared. I know what suffering is, I know what dukkha is. I see what it's like, what it's gone. That famous simile of mine, which I used a lot in Germany, of the tadpole, and you know that one. Tadpole in the water, doesn't know what water is. Tadpole becomes frog, jumps up, now something missing, that's called water. If you haven't let go of the suffering of the five senses, in other words, gone into the sixth sense, the pure sixth sense, just the jhana state, you will never be able to really know that five senses are dukkha. In the theory, yes. Much experience, yes. But not totally, not fully, not pari nyatabang. When you get into a jhana or two, you just see that these five senses, my goodness, they are actually dukkha. Totally. Whichever way you look at it, they're dukkha. You get to the second jhana, will is dukkha. All this controlling, this choosing, whatever, is all suffering. It's brilliant to see that, because then you know why we're trying to let go. Why I say just learn how to do nothing, or nothing doing. You learn that will is the problem. It's the enemy number one, if you like. Certainly enemy number one of jhana. You can't enter jhana with will. That has to be let go a long way beforehand. And if you could do that, let go, be still, upasama, peaceful, nothing moving. And that's where you sort of these great states come from. So again, I love that sort of idea of stillness, of peace, of not moving, of nothing moving. And everything disappearing, and just keeping that stillness, that peace, that silence, that nothingness, that emptiness where nothing's happening, keeping that for long periods of time, and just seeing these jhanas just come to you. They're just, it's almost like a fulfillment, it's like a blossoming of a plant. All you need to do is to keep that plant watered with stillness, and it just opens out by itself. It's its nature. A flower blooms. Stillness blossoms into jhana. It's just what happens. You just need to keep still, keep peaceful, don't do anything. If one can do that, it happens. And you realize that, wow, stillness, letting go of will led to bliss. You've got out of the lake of suffering and now a frog. You understand why that was suffering. You've got experience. So this is what happens. Whether you can do it another way, I don't know, but I can't see it. But certainly you can do it with the jhanas. And as you understand this more and more, the jhanas become easier, become natural. So this is what we're aiming for. So when you see this is suffering, dukkha, maybe then you can call yourself a stream winner. And that's an amazing thing to be able to say. 7 lifetimes left, you're on the path. You're going to get there. You really are a Buddhist. You really are a disciple of the Buddha. This is big stuff. This is how it's achieved, how you get there, or how it happens rather, not how you get there. So, understand that suffering. Of course, the second noble truth is so clear, craving leads to suffering. We're always seeking delight here and there, especially in the realm of the 5 senses. And do you really want to do that? Always seeking delight, ever here, ever there. You know, in the sort of the tea, in the coffee, in the food, just coming and going, watching this, searching for that, seeking delight, you know, first in solitude and then in company, seeking delight in going up onto the hill or watching the sunsets or whatever else is around for you to find delight in this monastery. Is that really what you want to do? Buddha said that just leads to more suffering. So take these Buddha's teachings seriously. They're profound and they're wonderful. And as the message is obvious. So let go of that suffering. Let go of the craving. By the 4 ways of letting go in the third noble truth. I've given so many talks about that. Chaga, Muti, Anala. Giving, expecting nothing back in return. Don't expect anything from this rains retreat. Don't expect anything from this talk. Don't expect anything from your meditation. Give. Surrender, let go. If you want something, if this is some sort of deal, I'm coming here for the rains retreat, and this is what I want to get back in return, you might as well leave now. But if you're really giving, expecting nothing back in return whatsoever, that's real dana, real chaga. Chaga was the word. So this is actually how I meditate. I don't expect nimittas, I don't expect jhanas. So it's almost like my offering to the Buddha. Sit down there, I offer my body and my mind to the great teacher, the Buddha. I just give, let go. And I know if I expect something to happen, it never does. No expectations. Then the door is wide open for peace, for stillness, for bliss, for nimittas, for jhanas. So that's the third noble truth. And in Frankfurt, in here, in Jhana Grove, I've often taught from the 4 noble truths, the 2 types of meditation. Third noble truth meditation and second noble truth meditation. Please keep those in mind, they're very helpful. If you're suffering in the meditation, you're sitting in your huts and it's not having a good time, it means you've been craving, you've been wanting something. Craving leads to suffering. An easy equation, keep it in mind. If you don't want to suffer when you're meditating, try meditating according to third noble truth. Chaga, no expectations. Muti, freedom. You'll know what that means, just happy to be here. If you're happy to be where you are, it's never a prison. And Patinissaka, throwing things away. Not to get things, not to get attainments, but to let go of things. See how much you can abandon. Don't be a spiritual materialist, just getting all your attainments and all your experiences and comparing on how long you can meditate and asking your friend, how long have you meditated? Only 9 hours? Oh, I did that a few days ago, 10 hours, 12 hours. only first jhana, I got second jhana. Don't be like that. Some people are like that, spiritual materialists. So just give, free, give away. And of course, Analia, nothing sticks to you, not even attainments, not even jhana sticks to you. You never make a self out of this, assume a self in it, never my attainment. It's great in the deep meditations, that's one of the experiences you have, this has nothing to do with me. I didn't do this. I disappeared and it happened. I let go, I didn't try anything, don't blame me that I got jhana. That's the sort of idea which you get. It's just, you would disappear, vanish. It's not an attainment. It's not an achievement. If you really experience these things many times, it's just what happens when you stop achieving, when you stop attaining. It's nothing sticks, it's anarya. So that's a great teaching, that third noble truth. And of course the fourth noble truth, the path. The path. The only path. Verse 274. Ezo wa mago nati anyo dasa nasa visuddhiya. This, the only path. Ezo wa is short for ewa. Maga. This, the only path. Nati anyo. There is not another. Dasa nasa visuddhiya. For the purification of insight, the dasana. The seeing clearly. And of course that refers to Eightfold Path. It's part of the Magga Wagga of the Dhammapada. One of my favourite quotes. Brilliant. It's so clear. This is the only way. Eightfold Path, said the Buddha. So this is what we're supposed to be doing. Eightfold Path. What are you supposed to be practicing? Eightfold Path. What are you supposed to be doing all day? Eightfold Path. How are we going to spend our retreat? Eightfold Path. It's brilliant. Right view. Not me, not mine, not a self, nothing in here. Everything comes and goes, just impermanence, subject to cessation. And this whole lot is suffering. Just know that much. Know the Four Noble Truths. That's good enough for right view. The right intention. One of my favourites of the Eightfold Path, one of the most neglected factors, which is intentions, the way your mind moves, to let go, nekamma, kindness, compassion, avayapada, and gentleness, vihingsaka, gentleness. Please remember that, if you're aggressive, you've lost the Eightfold Path. If you're sort of angry, ill will, you have no sort of kindness to your breath, to your body, to your mind, you've lost the Eightfold Path. And if you're trying to get something, you're not letting go, you're not renouncing. You're not renouncing your five senses, you're not renouncing your will, you're not renouncing your consciousness, you're not following the Eightfold Path. Doesn't work then. You practice that Eightfold Path, factor number two, correctly, incredibly powerful. That's how we meditate. That's how it works. Follow the path, and that's what happens. And right speech, right action, right livelihood. Speak properly, kindly to one another, respectfully to the senior monks. Do good actions. Don't break the precepts or the rules for this retreat. You'll know what to do. This is not a police state. No one's going to be there and sort of punishing you if you make mistakes. You're mature beings. You're here for a reason. So act properly. The right livelihood. You know what to do. You have your duties, services to perform. Do them properly to the best of your ability. Don't be slack. Don't try and give them off to other people. It's your job. You do that, you're just following 3/8 of the Eightfold Path. And the right effort, the effort to arouse positive qualities and abandon unwholesome ones. Have a look, first of all, where those unwholesome qualities come from. And then you know they're always because of craving, wanting. let go, and you'll find that's the way to develop the skillful qualities. That's why the effort to let go, the effort to stop, the effort to renounce, to be kind, to be gentle. That takes effort for many people because it goes against the grain. They have to be aware and mindful and protect their mind. That takes a little bit of effort. It's the effort to stop, the effort to say no, the effort to renounce, the effort to be kind, the effort basically to stop all effort. Which may sound a bit of like an oxymoron, but I'm just being descriptive. It took me a long time to learn how to let go. Just to sit there and just wait. Waiting in the moment. Too often that you're waiting for something to happen, that's waiting in the future. Waiting in the moment is right effort. Just being here. Forget what's going to happen next, just be here. To have no demands of where you're going to get in meditation, just be here. No complaints, just be here. It's great to be able to do that. That's my right effort. And of course, mindfulness is not something you do. Big mistake. People think that I must establish mindfulness with my will. You get a sort of mindfulness that way, but it's a plastic mindfulness. It's not natural. And it just doesn't work. The real mindfulness comes when you totally let go. And because of the right effort, this beautiful mindfulness comes up. Natural, powerful, superpower mindfulness. The mindfulness gets strong when the hindrances get weak. The hindrances are fed by will and negativity. So you stop the will and the hindrances vanish after a while. And the mindfulness gets strong. And that's why if ever you're tired and sleepy, don't worry about it. Just be still. Don't do things. And then the tiredness will disappear. Energy comes out through stillness. The mind wakes up. And that's called mindfulness. And the sort of mindfulness you need to get into stillness, to get enlightenment, is a huge amount of mindfulness. Ordinary mindfulness is nowhere near powerful enough. Hopefully that each one of you have sometimes experienced really nice meditations. You know your mindfulness is incredibly strong and powerful. You understand mindfulness is not just mindfulness. It's many different degrees of power to that mindfulness. And so you just develop stronger and stronger mindfulnesses. Powerful seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching if you're outside of deep meditation. And then just incredibly powerful mindfulness when you close your eyes. You can actually see just many parts of the breath. So the mindfulness is very, very strong, like a bright light. You can see so much detail, so much going on there. And of course, the other thing with strong mindfulness is always associated with lots of happiness and joy. Strong mindfulness, mental energy, mental happiness. You have a great time. And of course, that happiness coming from the mindfulness. Mindfulness, happiness, letting go. You're on the edge of the deep meditations of jhanas. Why? Because the deep meditations are nothing more than stillness. Deep stillness. Powerful mindfulness. So you can see all the reasons why you move. You stop it. Powerful mindfulness sees all the tricks of the will. So you can circumvent them. Powerful mindfulness. So you can see the mind. Be still. And get into these incredible deep states of stillness. You're completing the Eightfold Path. The Buddha said, this is the path which leads to Nibbana. So don't sort of settle for anything less during this range retreat. That Dhamma Chakkappavattana Sutta laid out the path, laid out the instructions. It's not just theory, it's not just Abhidhamma, this is meditation practice. You know when I've, just 5 or 10 years as a monk, all these people said, where are the instructions in meditation in the suttas? You know, they started to think that Satipatthana was suttas were the instructions in meditation. Anapanasati was instructions in meditation. Look, in Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, there's heaps of instructions in meditation from the Buddha. It's not just following one stage and then another stage and another stage and another stage. That's not the instructions of Buddhist meditation. It's just letting go, making peace, being kind, being gentle, developing strong mindfulness, keeping precepts. That's what the instructions are. The Eightfold Path is the instruction in meditation. It's not some sort of theory, it's meditation practice. Understanding that, this is what we do. We do Eightfold Path meditation, Third Noble Truth meditation, Avoid Like Hell, Second Noble Truth meditation. And the Buddha said, just like he did, you do that, and it's a path. He said, it's Bhavaitabhang. It should be developed. So that's your job for the next few months, to develop the Eightfold Path. And one thing I can promise you, if you follow the development path properly, you'll have a wonderful range retreat. You get more and more peaceful, more and more happiness, and actually see Dharma instead of having to read about it or listen to it on a CD. The CD is inside of you. The book is your meditation. You do it for yourself. You can actually then become a teacher. You won't find it any different than what you see it in suttas. It's just it makes the suttas come alive. You realize that what the Buddha taught was incredibly accurate, breathtakingly beautiful. Why? Because you've been there and seen the Buddha's description and realize he's describing what you've experienced, and it's incredibly powerful. So this is your job for the range retreat. Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sermon, setting off the wheel of Dhamma. So may that also set off the wheel of Dhamma, so you have the best range retreat you've ever had. One which you do really get some deep meditations, enlightenment, but not as a spiritual attainment, but as a spiritual renunciation. Losing yourself, letting go of as much as you possibly can, for the peace, the stillness, and the freedom of enlightenment. Go for broke. And you are the one who's going to be broke. That's the talk tonight.
Supatipadu Bhagavato Sāvāna.